summer 2023 movies so far. This is Geek Confidential. Welcome to the Geek Confidential Podcast. My name is Luke Kerr. Joining me today for an episode, because it feels like we haven't recorded in forever, which it sort of is true, Melody Eagles. Welcome, Mel.
Hey, hey.
Mo Walker, welcome.
I'm glad to be here, Luke.
Well, we are going to be discussing the summer movies of 2023 so far. So basically, this is the kickoff weekend, which basically is either the very last weekend of April or the first weekend of May, depending on when Marvel releases its first movie of the summer movie season. And we're basically taking it to the July 4 weekend because Indiana Jones came out for the July 4 weekend that spans both the end of June and the 1st of July. So let's dive in. Mel, what is your worst movie of the summer so far?
So for this one, I'm probably going to get it for this and I don't even care. Honestly, truly, of the movies that I have seen, this is the one that was honestly just probably the most disappointing, and that's The Flash. It was something that I specifically watched because I knew we were going to do this podcast. I had a lot of mixed feelings going into it, especially with all of the controversy surrounding the lead star, Ezra Miller. I was not trying to support this film, but I do love The Flash, the character in general, just going in. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm power through it. I'm going to watch this movie. And honestly, all that hype they was talking about, oh, it's the best superhero movie ever, and this is going to change the game, those were pure, unadulterated lies, fairy tales, fallacies, falsehoods, everything. I think the film had some really great moments to it. Honestly, my favorite parts were watching Michael Keaton's Batman Return and the old Bat Cave, and all of that was full of nostalgia and amazingness, and I was fangirling in the theater. But as for the actual Flashpoint stories, they changed a lot of it because it's supposed to be Thomas Wayne and not Bruce Wayne. I thought that was kind of an interesting take on it. There was some CGI issues. There's a couple
there
of
There was
plot
more
things.
Than some CGI issues.
Okay, there was a lot of CGI issues. There was some plot things as well. I did enjoy seeing that girl from Young and the Restless, Sasha
Kelly,
how you ever say it, as Supergirl. I thought she was great.
She's gotten a lot of kudos from various geek podcasts that I've listened to. A lot of people are like, yeah, she did a great job with mm-hmm. the limited material that she got. So it was really good to see a soap alum have a successful turn, even though the movie isn't that great.
Agreed 1,000%. And I did feel like her role was very limited. I mean, I know that this is a story about The Flash, but I felt like we could have seen maybe a little bit more of her, but she did a really good job. I really hope they keep her in that role because heaven knows what's going on over there at DC, but there was a lot of things. And then that whole middle sequence with all of the past superhero alumni and some of them with movies that didn't even air. Ooh, I got a big problem with that. But there was a lot that could have been done. And for all the hype that they tried to make it out to be, it just wasn't.
The best part about The Flash was the Blue Beetle trailer that went before it. Because the Blue Beetle wow. trailer that went before it was fantastic. Like, I want to see the wow. Blue Beetle movie.
So much shade. Oh, my God.
Damn, Luke, that's cold.
Well, there's more of a story arc. There's more character development in the Blue Beetle trailer than there is in the entirety of the Flash movie.
But the thing is, are they going to keep the Blue Beetle around? Is it still going to be canon after they quote unquote reset the universe? Because some people are coming and some people aren't. Like, even matter?
I don't know if this is true, but I heard this listening on a different podcast, so it's secondhand knowledge. But someone said that this is the Blue Beetle is basically the first of the new world. I don't know if that's true.
No, I know James Gunn was talking about the new Superman is supposed to be the first one, so I don't know.
Yeah,
well, the new Superman is hot. As just an aside,
I mean, he's Superman, he's supposed to be sexy.
Well, so, that's true.
So what I'll say about Blue, I mean, there have been different reports about Blue Beetle, and I think it depends on how well it does box office wise and how well the new Blue Beetle is received, whether or not that version of the character will continue on. Because I remember originally this was supposed to be an HBO Max film, and it's gotten a theatrical release, and they I guess increased the CGI budget and did some other things for the Blue Beetle movie. But
the trailer looks really good. Like that, I'll put it this way. That Blue Beetle trailer looks like it's going to be the most enjoyable DC movie since Aquaman. Aquaman wasn't a great movie, but it was a ton of fun. And that's the same vibe that I got from Blue Beetle. Like, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a fun movie. Mo, what was your worst movie of the summer so far?
So again, Melb is basically like ate through the Flash, and I'll be honest with you, it was my most disappointing film, and I will say I've seen it twice in theaters. And
what did you have to pay both times?
That? No, I have a pass.
Oh,
so I have one.
So wait. You voluntarily subjected yourself to that twice?
So here's again my argument for it. It's a disappointment, but I wouldn't say it's like the worst.
They
movie.
Put a baby in a microwave.
Here's what I'll say.
I saw that and I was like, how are they not going to get sued if someone put, if some random kid puts their younger sibling in a microwave? Like,
well, so Luke, so when I saw that scene, and you know what, it honestly reminded me of many, many years ago, there was a DC comic, this like parody comic, in which baby Superman ended up put in a microwave. And that's what it made me think of when I saw that scene. Now, the babies in peril, I knew that those children were going to survive. There was absolutely no way they were going to let any one of those children, those babies, perish at the beginning of the Flash movie, or they would have totally lost the audience. Now, I think they were being like kind of like tongue-in-cheek and just trying to, I guess, elevate the stakes or whatnot. You never would have seen any sort of situation like this in the CW version of The Flash. They never would have had Grant Gustin do that. And I think maybe part of it is, again, trying to distinguish this version of Barry Allen, the Ezra Miller version, from the Grant Gustin version of Barry Allen. Now, I personally feel like The Flash, it was supposed to be an origin story, the character dealing with the trauma, and obviously that's tied directly into Flashpoint, whether you read the Flashpoint comic, whether you saw the version of Flashpoint on The Flash. I feel like perhaps what could have salvaged this movie, at least initially, if roles had been expanded for whether it was Ben Affleck's version of Batman, Gal Gadot's version of Wonder Woman, and truly turned this into more of a quote-unquote Flashpoint movie and a quasi-Justice League movie. I think that would have kind of helped things along a bit, because there was a bit, in my opinion, one of the critical stumbling blocks is that, you know, there's all this emphasis on, you know, get Barry's father's conviction overturned. But we don't ever learn, like, who killed his mother or why. Now, obviously, they could not go the route of.
Well, but
the
we never find out that who kills Batman's parents in the
movie.
Yes,
we do.
In the movies?
Yes, we do. Yeah, it would depend on which version of the movie it is. It's either Joe Chill, it's the Joker. I mean,
We found that out in the comics, but like I'm trying to think about the Dark Knight trilogy, and I'm like, did we learn in the Dark Knight trilogy who killed his parents? No.
Well, here's the thing though. But here's the thing about that. Now we've had so many different versions of Batman movies that we found out who his parents' killer was, and I'm fairly positive that in the Dark Knight Returns series, that was set up by the Maroni family. If I remember, the crime family was the one who put that hit on them, if I remember correctly.
Right. So, we have a family, but we don't know who actually did it.
But we know who pulled the trigger and why. But we know the rationale behind it. But I'm saying with this.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say is that, like, obviously they had to swerve because they couldn't put in the Reverse Flash, because then, you know, the CW, you dredge up all that stuff from the CW Flash series. So, you know, I just feel like they had problems with the plot structure of this from jump, and they couldn't really fix it. And having the younger Barry ultimately become some sort of Dark Flash, or, you know, you could even call him their version of the Reverse Flash, and kind of manipulating all these events as being one of the villains in this, you know, was a patchwork job.
So,
go
ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, again, one of my other problems that Mel did not address is that, again, yeah, I had some issues with the CGI, but how do you have a Flash movie, right? But you reference all these other versions of Batman. You reference all these other versions of Superman. You have two versions of Supergirl in this movie, but you can't reference either one of the television versions of the Flash, whether it was the John Preach. Wesley Shipp version of the Flash, or was it the Grant Gustin? And you had Ezra Miller make an appearance on the Flash TV show during Crisis on Infinite Earths event. It does not make sense. But yet you can spend money on Nicolas Cage with his hair, chest hair popping, and long hair fighting some giant spider, some CGI spider from some aborted 90s version of a Superman script. I mean, that is what frustrated me. I mean, I love Michael Keaton as Batman. I love Sasha Calle as Supergirl. And I wish we'd gotten more of her, because I feel like the trailers were misleading. It seemed like we were getting more of her than what we did. I'm done, so, Luke, with my rant.
Well,
Go ahead, Mo. So
that was going to be my question. Like, you said it was most disappointing. Did you have something that has been worse than most disappointing?
No, because the problem is, it's like, well, if I go through, look through some of the other films that I've watched, I would say Transformers was paint by numbers. I mean, Transformers to me would be the Transformers Rise of the Beast movie. It was, I would say, paint by numbers, but it was so entertaining and it did what it needed to do that I can't say it was worse than The Flash. It was, you know.
See, and I feel that way about a number of movies that fall sort of into my mid-tier. So far this summer, and before I get to The Flash, because it's also my worst movie of the summer so far, I feel like there's a number of movies in which, if you go to them, they're just thoroughly enjoyable popcorn flicks. They're not necessarily great movies, but I don't feel like I've wasted my time. And there have been other summers where you go to a movie and the Transformers movie has been terrible and you feel like you've wasted time and you've wasted money. But for me, the Transformers Rise of the Beasts was a thoroughly enjoyable popcorn movie, and I enjoyed it for what it was. The same goes for Indiana Jones. There was a lot of, like, nostalgia. Harrison Ford was a ton of fun. The new premise was fun. And it was just a fun, enjoyable popcorn movie. I feel like that might be the headline for this summer, is there's just a bunch of fun movies. They're not necessarily great, but they're fun. The Flash is definitely my worst movie of the summer so far. The first quarter of the movie, in which Ezra Miller was playing Barry Allen by himself before he goes back in time, was almost complete and utter trash. The scene in which he's saving the babies was terrible. I don't understand why at the beginning of the movie he had to run across the country to get to Gotham to save the babies, and then later in the movie he doesn't have to run across the country again. It like it doesn't make sense. There's things like that. There, some people have pointed out there's a discrepancy between the last time Ezra Miller appeared and this time, in terms of now they're saying that he has to eat and he vibrates too fast. So that's why we have the babies in microwaves and on gurneys and all that other stuff. And I'm like, Ezra Miller by himself as the Flash is not a very engaging character. The performance is just subpar. I did not actually enjoy any part of the Flash until we got to the point where he came across his younger self, and his younger self was a fuck up. And there was something about Ezra Miller playing two sides of this character, one of which is a fuck up and the other one is the one who knows what he's supposed to do and knows the ropes, that actually finally sort of worked for Ezra Miller as an actor. By himself, talking into a mic to Batman, who's off chasing whatever, while the Flash is saving babies, does not work. Like, I feel like there's a whole, the first 25 minutes of the movie could have been something else and given us much more character development. There's the fact that Barry and Iris, I like the actress who plays Iris, but they don't really have a lot of chemistry and they didn't do a lot of setup. The most enjoyable parts of that film for me was when he, the Barry, was seeing his past self, or when he ended up in the alternate timeline and he found out that actors that we know played certain movies actually were not no longer in those roles. There was some humor in that. There was some fun in it. There was some frustration on Barry's part. That was enjoyable. Sasha Calle did good. I've never watched the Michael Keaton movies, so for me, there's no nostalgia element in it.
What did you just say?
Wait, wait. Seriously, you've never Hold seen on. Batman or Batman Returns?
No, I have not. So there
How
was...
How you hosted this podcast?
Well, that's the same thing people...
I am confusion.
Listen... I did not watch, like, when I was a child growing up, from basically the age from fourth grade until I went to college, I was not exposed to pop culture. So I missed a giant chunk of a whole bunch of things. And I've never taken the time to go back and watch it.
And why not, Luke?
Because there's so much pop
didn't
culture.
Did that first movie come out in like 1989? Like,
I didn't graduate from high school till 98.
Luke, what I'm saying is you have time to watch it.
I host another podcast in which I watch multiple hours of daily soaps, and I tried watch stuff for this podcast currently. There's enough pop culture currently airing to keep me busy.
I was just going to ask, Luke, so two things. So regarding Barry's caloric intake in order for their powers to function. Now, as we all know, that's canon from whether it's the comics, it was in the television show, multiple television, even going back to the old CBS John Wesley Shipp version, that was canon. Now, that actually was a minor plot point in previous Justice League films. I specifically remember the Joss Whedon cut. You know, there were pizza boxes and some other things. It has been brought up, but it was not a critical plot point like it is in this film.
Maybe there's people who care about that little plot point, but in a movie that has so many other big problems, the fact that so much emphasis was placed on it seems pointless to me.
Well, I mean, again, with my,
I'm not saying it's a bad plot point. I'm just saying this movie had a crap load of problems. Us having to do the nuance of his eating.
Well, again, for me, I think that you have to bring that up in a Flash solo film, because I'm thinking this was not an issue pre comics. Crisis on Infinite Earths. It was only when Wally West became the Flash in the mid 80s, did you get more of this caloric intake thing? And certainly in their solo comics in the 90s.
I went
beyond.
For how many seasons of The Flash on the CW without having to worry about Barry's caloric intake?
Well, again,
I'm just saying,
mention it.
But what I'm saying is, on The Flash, it wasn't ever a major plot point. In this movie, it literally becomes a major plot point.
I think that's something that maybe we need to talk about how this movie kind of had to live in the shadow of the CW's version of the Flash series, which had been on for so many years. And that really has kind of set the standard, in a way, for that character. So when you went in watching this, I really think that hurt the film just in general. Because now everything that happens, I'm going to go, but on The Flash, on the CW, this happened. So I get what Luke is saying, but at the same time, Mo is saying there is established story for this going back to the comics.
I would agree with you in essence, except for the fact that this is Warner Brothers' own making. Warner Brothers kept television and movies separate for so long that when one side does it well and the other side fails, there's always a comparison. If they had actually allowed for the cameos that Mo had, you could then just rationalize this stuff as, oh, Barry Allen from the CW shows up, this one's slightly different, and everything's good, and you don't have to make it a plot point. And speaking of The Flash, considering we're talking about Flashpoint, there's an animated movie that's fucking great and did it well. Why didn't they use that script?
I mean, this is the third version. This is the third iteration.
Right. And two of them were done really well. This one has no excuse for being a fuck up.
So Warner Brothers needs to take notes, because I feel like they may run into a similar problem when Superman Legacy comes, depending on when Superman and Lois ends, because you're gonna have, if Superman and Lois ends up getting an additional fifth season, you know, or this writer's strike is so long that the show ends, you're gonna run into the same problem. Like you said, Luke.
But once again, I don't think that it needs to be a problem that you have a television and separate television and movie franchises. Smallville did not impact Henry Cavill's version of Superman. And Superman and Lois is a fantastic show, but they've kept these things separate. We've seen how it's done. It's really well produced, but we know that it's on an alternate Earth from the Flash's television Flash's Flashpoint. And it's okay. It's okay that Ezra Miller is in a different Flashpoint realm. It's entirely okay that both Flashes in their respective realms have Flashpoints. As long as all you do is have a little cameo here and there, you can keep these worlds separate and you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about things like caloric intake. We wasted the first 20 to 30 minutes on terrible CGI, mind you. Terrible CGI. Those babies look like plastic toys from the 1950s of dolls. There's no excuse why in 2023 CGI babies look like 1950s dolls. It doesn't make sense. That first 20 to 30 minutes of the movie was a complete waste, and they could have done something better.
But the director said that it's all from Barry's perspective, and that's why they look the way they look.
The director is wrong. Like,
okay. I won't go into the rest of it because a lot of it was covered. I will just say that Sasha Calle was fantastic.
Yes.
I would like to see her in her own movie, or for her to show up in another team movie, if possible, in Barry's current realm, considering her and Michael Keaton's realm was wiped out. Okay, let's talk about a little bit about the movies that we've enjoyed, but aren't necessarily our favorite of the season so far. Mo, why don't you just give us a few bullet points on the movies that you've enjoyed so far this summer?
So I would say the two that fall within that I enjoyed, but I wouldn't say are the cream of the crop. For me, one is the aforementioned Transformers Rise of the Beasts. I think that integrating the Beast Wars storyline definitely was a definitely hit all the nostalgia buttons for me. I enjoyed, even though I was certainly probably a little older when the Beast Wars animated series came
out. I
love
the Beast Wars animated series. I really did.
I enjoyed it. And I think that the fact that it's clear that the writers and the directors love interweaving older bits of Transformers continuity and so forth. I appreciate the fact that the CGI was adequate. I think that, you know, I certainly did not expect the Beast Transformers to look like animals when they transformed, you know, entirely, but, you know, it worked. And I think that the template that Michael Bay has established with these films, you know, really has paid off. It worked. I love how this tied into Bumblebee. But again, it was very paint by numbers. I love the twist at the end that we got, that it's potentially this is part of a bigger franchise, you know, by incorporating, you know, a little G.I. Joe.
But I've got timeline questions about that.
Well, again, you can obviously say that this is like another alternate.
They set this in 1984, right?
No. This is in the 90s.
Yeah. 94. Okay. It was either 84 or 94.
No, it was 94. Definitely okay. 94.
So they set this in 1994. We've had G.I. Joe movies since. We've had Transformers movies. All the Transformers movies, I think, still fit into continuity, if I'm not mistaken.
No, they don't. They don't anymore. Like, as of Bumblebee, it's a new continuity.
This is in the Bumblebee continuity? This is not in the prior movie continuities? Okay.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Well, so then basically it's Bumblebee's, this Transformers, and is there one other Transformers in that Bumblebee continuity?
No, it's just these two films.
Okay. So basically, we would just be getting an entirely new G.I. Joe.
Correct, yes.
Well, the last G.I. Joe wasn't great, but there were some actors in it that I really like. Okay, what other movies stood out for you so far this summer?
So I did watch, and I know Dan will enjoy this, Shin Ultraman, my local Alamo Draft House had a one-night screening of this film. If you're not familiar with the Ultraman concept, it is a Japanese superhero series. Netflix currently airs an animated version of this Ultraman. There's going to be some more Ultraman stuff coming. It honestly, if you're familiar with the concept of Ultraman, this very much was paint by numbers in terms of. It was a modern retake of the original first season of Ultraman, basically. And what I loved about it, it was directed by the director who did the Evangelion films. And that's why I know Dan will appreciate this. It emotionally, I just think it just because you could see that it was basically compressing the plot points from a full season of a television series that's, you know, roughly like 50 episodes into this more or less 2-hour film. It was entertaining, but certainly it didn't rise to the top. And I certainly appreciate the fact that we're able to get films from other countries playing in my local movie theater. So, but other than that, those are what I would consider like the mediocre films, Transformers, Rise of the Beast, and Shin Ultraman.
Mel, what movies have you enjoyed so far this summer?
So I really enjoyed The Last Guardians better than I thought I would, because this is movie three and you kind of don't really know how it's going to go. But I think they did a really nice wrap up for this iteration of the Guardians of the Galaxy. It was nice seeing the High Evolutionary in live action. I love our vibe between all of our guardians. You know, Gamora is back, but it's not the Gamora that we know. And then she's rolling around Sylvester Stallone, who I didn't know how was gonna he was exactly gonna fit in the MCU, but it actually wasn't terrible. I really, really enjoyed the fact that they centered the story around Rocket. And I thought that was so smart, because we didn't know much about him. We knew he had a very troublesome past, but we didn't know much about it. And just seeing that, they did such a great job telling that story and kind of really winning you over on that. And we know that this is our last round with this gang and we're going to get a new one. And they set that up too. In the end of the film, we know that, you know, these certain people are going to be our new guardians. And I was like, I think they did a really good job with that. And I just enjoyed it more than I thought it would. I don't know if I would necessarily call it mediocre, maybe a little bit of a step above mediocre, but it was definitely just enjoyable.
What other ones?
That's really the one that sticks out to me.
Okay. Well, I'm going to just sort of go through the movies that I've watched that I that aren't like my number one. But I'll pick up where Mel left off with Guardians of the Galaxy. This was a vast improvement over the second one. The second one was sort of disappointing to me. I thought character-wise, we got so much more character development in this one. The team cohesion for the original team felt really good. I am a little bit nervous about that new team because there aren't a lot of characters there that I particularly care about. I mean, obviously Groot and Rocket are wonderful, but I'm not sure that I'm all that invested in Kraglin. He's great as a periphery, but I feel like that's sort of like Legends of Tomorrow, where all of a sudden Triple Nipple becomes a main character. I don't know that I need Kraglin to be a main character. I think that Nebula's evolution as a character has been something wonderful to see. I thought that Peter Quill was very interesting. His relationship with Gamora, there were elements of it that I completely understood why they had the story they had, but then at the same time, I was like, ooh, this is a little depressing. And so there was a ton of character development. Rocket's story was powerful. Like, every time I saw the stuff that he was going through, it made me sad because, like, my dog, Yanto, I adopted him from a humane society, and him, like, seeing Rocket in the cage and the testing that was done on them, not that Yanto had testing done, but it just made me like feel bad because I was like, oh, well, this is Yanto going through this. And so it was a good movie. I enjoyed it. It was a great way to kick off the summer. Transformers Rise of the Beasts, I enjoyed it. This was another one of those, just, it was a little bit paint by numbers, but they did it well. Just because you paint by numbers doesn't mean it has to be bad. It can be an enjoyable film, and this was just a fun popcorn movie that you can enjoy in the summer, you can take your family to, you can have some good laughs, see some action, see some things blow up. Anthony Diaz, I think this might have been one of the first movies that I've seen him in. I thought he was really good as a lead. I liked Dominic Fishback. They had great, interesting compatriot chemistry, if that makes sense. It was a lot of fun watching those two. I like the Beast Wars nod because, like, when Mo was talking, I loved the animated series for that. It was wonderful. Little Mermaid. This is going to be one of those ones where I know there was a lot of controversy about the casting, and I was okay with this casting. These are mythical creatures. I think that, and so I like, that doesn't even faze me. I thought Melissa McCarthy as Ursula was amazing. She was Ursula incarnate, come to life. It was fantastic. My problem is with a lot of these Disney live action versions is that there's so much vibrancy and there's so many things that you can do in animation that don't always translate onto the screen in CGI in the same way. And for me, this film didn't have the color vibrancy of the movie. The plot was pretty much the same plot, but I just, of all the live action animations, the two that I've enjoyed are Cruella and Maleficent. And both of those are live actions based on the characters before we see them in their actual respective movies. I've not enjoyed the ones where they're more scene for scene recreations. And so for me, this was very much a scene for scene recreation without the vibrancy, without some of the stuff that you can do in animation or with animation. And as a purely aesthetic standpoint, and having talked about terrible hair on multiple podcasts for almost two decades, I do not understand how they spent all that money for the underwater CGI. And then at the very end, they get Javier Bardem to come up out of that water and look like washed over death. All of the other mermaids and mermen behind him looked amazing. He comes out, and his otherwise underwater appearance was very, you knew that CGI was going on, but the colors were good, the hair flowed well, and he came out of that water to wish Ariel goodbye and safe travels. And outside of that water, his costuming looked terrible. Everything about Javier Bardem looked terrible. I do not understand how you spend all that money to try and make everything look so amazing, and then in the last scenes, you have Javier Bardem look like shit. It doesn't make sense to me. That was my biggest critique of Little Mermaid. Otherwise, it was an enjoyable movie. But I don't understand why he had to look terrible at the end. Doesn't make sense. But Melissa McCarthy was amazing.
So look, I have a question. Has there been, I don't know, so we know that there's been a lot in the of news reports. I believe Vulture did a piece about folks who are working on CGI being overworked. Were there any reports of, you know, maybe shoddy CGI on The Little Mermaid because people felt rushed or overworked or anything like that?
I don't remember seeing anything like that, but the thing about The Little Mermaid is a lot of it has been shot during the pandemic or just after the pandemic. And so things stop and started on various production cycles. So you never know what, I mean, we haven't been far enough away from the pandemic to get full movies that are shot without pandemic implications. So, but you wouldn't think that CGI would have, considering it's all in studio and not outside, you wouldn't think that it would be quite the same. But I don't remember anything about The Little Mermaid. A lot of people loved the movie. A lot of people loved it and thought it was thoroughly enjoyable. And it was an enjoyable movie. I just thought that when they got him out of water and he was no longer half CGI and he was actually talking and it was him in a costume, that looking like warmed over death was not the great way to end the movie. But he looked great underwater, so that wasn't a CGI issue. It's just CGI is almost never as vibrant as animation. That leads me to Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones, I went and watched it this last weekend, enjoyed it. Harrison Ford does Cranky well, and to see him do Indy one last time, to see them use, once again, this was sort of paint by numbers, but paint by numbers isn't always bad if they execute it well, and this was well executed in my opinion. All of these movies, Little Mermaid, Transformers, Indiana Jones, they would all get a 3 to a 3.5 depending on the movie. Well, Little Mermaid might get 2.75, but like they're decent movies. They're enjoyable movies. They're not a single one of them's a bad movie, but they're just enjoyable. That leads me to Fast X, which is my favorite movie of the summer so far. This had everything I needed. It had family. It had action. It brought back characters that we had seen in the past. I mean, we got Jason Statham. We got Helen Mirren. We have a new character played by Alan Richson, whose name is Ames. That was a very interesting character. We also got John Cena back, Charlize Theron. And surprisingly, the standout for me in this film was Jason Momoa. Now, Jason Momoa is someone who I remember from way back when, his early days in television, when he was on, I think it was a Fox or CW show, where he was a bartender on a Hawaiian beach resort or something like that. Like, I've watched him for years. His character Dante in Fast X is the best The Joker I have seen in the modern era. Like, if we look at Jared Leto's The Joker, way better than that. Way better than that. Not the modern era, because I guess I did forget about Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger is still the best. But since Heath Ledger, this character Dante is basically the Joker for the Fast franchise. And Jason Momoa played this insane, creepy, maniacal, yet comedic character so well. It was such a surprise. I was not expecting that to pop up in a Fast movie. It took me by complete surprise. But I enjoyed the film. I'm looking forward to the next one. It's my best. It's my favorite movie of the summer so far. Mo, what is your favorite movie of the summer so far?
So I did have a question. So are you saying that Jason Momoa's Fast X Joker is better than the Joaquin Phoenix Joker?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And I did have a question about Indiana Jones, actually two questions, because I haven't seen it yet, and as of this recording, and one, how do you need to have recently watched the previous Indiana Jones films in order to appreciate or understand where this is coming? Okay.
This basically gives you the full premise for the movie at the very beginning by using some CGI like they used in the Star Wars movies. To de-age Harrison Ford, and we get, it basically starts out in World War II, and then it comes to the present.
Okay. And you didn't have any problems with the de-aged Harrison Ford?
Nope. But the thing about that is all they had to basically do is go back and look at the younger Harrison Ford from the original Indy movies. It wasn't that difficult for them to do it with him.
And so, yeah, and just transition to my favorite movie. So I will say I don't have a tie, but I will say my number two would be Guardians of the Galaxy 3, for pretty much what everyone has said about it, the film previously. I thought that it had a lot of emotion. I was really curious about how they were going to utilize the High Evolutionary, given that the High Evolutionary has such a convoluted comic book backstory and origin, the fact that you tied in Rocket Raccoon's origin with the High Evolutionaries, beast creatures, they didn't go into the Knights of Wonder and all that other comic lore and so forth, but I appreciate the fact that you played with Counter Earth and all that other stuff from the comics and mixed it up into a nice new, easily to digest package. The fact, I think probably the thing about Guardians, I wasn't, two things that really didn't make it my number one film was, one, I didn't entirely have too much of a connection with the version of Adam Warlock that was in this film. I know that for me, when I think of Adam Warlock, I think about Thanos. I think about the Infinity Gauntlet, and obviously you couldn't intertwine that character story into what we've gotten previously with Thanos. And I thought Star-Lord was a bit of too much of a man-child for me. Now, I understood,
Star-Lord?
You know, yes. Like, moping about Gamora.
Oh, got it. Okay. For a moment, I thought you were calling Warlock Star-Lord for a second. No, that's what I thought. No. Okay, got it.
Yeah, that Star-Lord, you know, was I get it. It very much was in character, and we certainly got, you know, a bit of this when he was appeared in the previous Thor movie, you know, feeling like he wasn't man enough because Thor was, you know, too macho for him. So it's very much in character. It just was the gag just went on too long for me. So, which brings me to my best film was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
I want to see that. I've heard such amazing things about it. I want to see that so bad, but I haven't gotten to it.
It's amazing. So for me, you know, it truly picks up the ball, really, from the previous. There's so much of Miles. There's obviously it's the story of Miles Morales. It's a continuing story of Miles Morales, more Gwen Stacy Spider-Woman, but how well that it incorporates or at least touches upon the previous Tom Holland Spider-Man movie. There's just so many little nuggets to just pick at it that, let alone, you know, with the story, but also just how it looks. I mean, people complain about CGI. Well, in this film, you've got, when they venture to the different spider worlds and you meet the various spider people, whether it's another version of Peter Parker or it's another version of whatever Spider-Man or Spider-Woman, how unique each world looks like. The animation just changes. And so you could just stare at and be overwhelmed by the animation for roughly this 2-hour film, let alone dig into the plot. And the plot in and of itself, I can really appreciate because it does help to address why Miles is, so I would say, such an important figure and helps him stand out from all these other various iterations of Peter Parker or spider people, and to help make Miles his own unique character. And I was just on the edge of my seat, literally, like when the film ended, I knew that we were going to get there's going to be a third film, but there were people in the theater with me who literally started shouting and saying, "What the fuck is going on? Why are they ending this film at this point?" People wanted this film. People cheered when I was in this theater for this film. And I would say it's easily the strongest superhero film I've seen this year. I think that it should be an Oscar contender again. It's absolutely worth going to see multiple times. I plan on going to see it another time before it leaves theaters.
Mel, what did you have for your best movie this summer so far?
Bo and I are 2 for 2. It is Across the Spider-Verse. That film is absolutely amazing. It is visually stunning. I cannot describe to y'all what it is watching this type of animation, where it's really just kind of a hybrid of everything that we've seen, and it's so just nice to look at. And I love how they're always incorporating different styles of the medium. Like, it'll be animation, but they have these little cutscenes in between scenes where there was a Lego version. There's a little bit of live action. There's some stop motion in there. It is so just ingenious, and I love the way that they do it. And they don't do it in a way where it takes you out of the story. It just adds to this incredible story that they've created for Miles Morales. And as he's trying to figure out being Spider-Man, and he has this crush on Gwen, but Gwen has her own things going on, and we know he's battling the spot, but we don't know exactly what's going on there. And you get a little bit of backstory on the spot, you get backstory on Gwen, you get backstory, more backstory on Miles. And as you go through the Spider-Verse, because essentially that's really what we're going through, I love, like Mo said, all the different Spider-Mans and their villains and how different they are, but actually how similar they are to each other. It really makes you think. And I love that battle where they're in the Spider-Verse with Miguel, and Miguel is voiced by Oscar Isaac, who is just amazing. And things go awry, and Miles is trying to battle his way out of there, and you just get all of these really incredible Easter eggs, and not just from, you know, other movies or other animations, just from straight up memes. Like, they did the Spider-Man pointing meme, they did all kinds of stuff, and I love how aware they are of their property, and they try to use everything to make it just better. And they do such a great job. And there was a great twist in the movie. And like Mo, I knew we were gonna get another movie, so it was gonna end on a cliffhanger. And what a hell of a cliffhanger did it end on. It was just great. I wanna see it again in theaters, because that is just the experience. But I think the animators did a fabulous job on this. I cannot wait to see the final version and how they will end up rescuing Miles from this reality that he's in. But it was great. Please go and see it.
That leads us to the question, what are you looking forward still for the rest of the summer? Because we've got July and August. I know just off the top of my head that I cannot wait for the new Mission Impossible movie, and Joyride looks like it's going to be bonkers fun. And surprisingly, for the first time in maybe ever, I'm interested in a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, because the animation looks so clever. I've got to at least see it because the animation looks fun. What are you guys looking forward to, Mel?
At the time of this recording, I have not seen Indiana Jones yet, and I really want to see that. That is one of my dad's favorite characters, movies, franchises. The original Raiders of the Lost Ark, this man saw that movie 6 times in theaters. So you can only imagine how many times I had to watch it growing up as a child, but I grew to love it. So I'm really excited for that one. Honestly, Blue Beetle looks really good.
Is that not coming out till fall, right?
Oh, I thought it was like late summer. So
it's August.
Oh, it's August for some reason.
It's around the same time as
Ninja
Turtles.
That's good. Yeah, it does. It definitely does. For some reason, I thought it was like a November release. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Blue Beetle. The trailer looks fabulous. It stars the kid who plays Miguel in Cobra Kai. And it just looks really good, really interesting. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has been my jam since I was a kid. So excited for that one as well. I'm trying to think any other ones.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot another one. You know what else I'm looking forward to? Mm. Meg 2 the Trench.
Oh,
Meg was such a fun and unexpectedly blast of a movie.
Thought it would be?
Right. The original Meg was so much fun, and I will watch anything that Jason Statham is in, but Meg as a movie was so much fun. I cannot wait for The Trench. It is going to be a blast.
I'm not even going to hold y'all. The first time I watched The Meg, it was on TNT, but ooh, it was good. So yes, I'm excited for the second one. It's going to be great.
Mo, what are you looking forward to for the rest of the summer?
So I'm going to say this in no particular order. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to Blue Beetle. I've got an affinity for the Blue Beetle character. Yeah, and Miguel from Cobra Kai. I really hope this does well for him, because he's so vibrant in that trailer. I really do wish good things for him. I'm also interested, obviously, in Indiana Jones. That's the reason why I was asking the questions to Luke earlier. I'm curious to see how this Indiana Jones ties up the character's arc, because obviously we're not getting another film with Harrison Ford in the lead. And then I'm also obviously a lot of I'm interested in the new Mission Impossible movies. You know, it feels like summer if you don't have like a Tom Cruise Mission Impossible film. I mean, this franchise has been going on for nearly 30 years, and it's you know, it's a summer popcorn film. And then finally, I'm really looking forward to Barbie because
I was just
oh,
gonna say, I forgot that one too. That
I
one
forgot
looks
what
like a blast.
that is good. Yeah, it's you know, here we have Margot Robbie, who is Harley Quinn, you know, supposed to be portraying, you know, the world's quintessential toy, you know, and it looks like it's, you know, Barbie comes to the real world, and I know that it's written and directed by Greta Gerwig, and so there's going to be all this social commentary and so forth in there, and it's going to be very satirical. To me, it shouldn't. When I first heard about Barbie, it shouldn't work. But the trailer for it, the press that I've been reading surrounding it sounds like it's gonna be a fun, memeable movie that we're gonna have to look forward to in a few weeks.
The moment it came out, it already became a memeable movie with everybody and their mother putting themselves in a Barbie box. Yes, I am definitely looking forward to Barbie as well. And since you guys corrected me on Blue Beetle, I am definitely looking forward to that because those trailers looked like so much fun. Any other final thoughts,
I have
Mel?
one more. I
Okay.
forgot. For my horror fans, Insidious 4. I cannot wait for this movie.
You
I
mean
love the Insidious series.
you're not looking forward to Haunted Mansion?
So
That seems
Insidious 4, everybody is back. Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne and everybody. And I am so excited. They even got the old lady who died in the third movie, but you know how death goes in these films. So we're going back into the red door. We're going back into the dream sequence of where he is. I cannot wait. I love the Insidious series. So yes, that's my one.
Okay. Well, on that note, we'd encourage you to comment on this episode at geekconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/GKConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/GKConfidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Mel is at Melody Eagles. And Mo is at Dr. Mo 77. It's been so long since I've done this, I'm having to pause for a second to remember. But I'm pretty sure it's Dr. Mo 77. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.